Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. President Trump just presiding over the signing of agreements between Israel, United Arab Emirates, and Bahrain, formally establishing diplomatic relations between those countries. More to come at the top of the hour on NPR News here on KPCC. Well, one of the things very clear to any of us here in Southern California is that we are dealing with terrible air quality right now, not just a result of our local fires, bad as they are, but we've had over the past week smoke from fires to the north of us as well. Joining us from the South Coast Air Quality Management District, Deputy Executive Officer Philip Fine, joining us again. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. Share with us what our air quality is right now, particularly in the San Gabriel Valley.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be on your show again. And as you said, the air quality in Southern California now is not good. It's in the unhealthy to very unhealthy in some areas. And as you mentioned, we're kind of getting a double whammy. We have the smoke from the Northern California and Oregon fires blowing down in a plume that's covering the western United States. It's now about 2,000 miles wide, and we're seeing that impact across our area in Southern California. But also, we have the Bobcat fire in the San Gabriel Valley, and those local impacts are adding to that as well.
So is that smoke from the Bobcat what's leading the air quality to be worse in some areas? And how far is that local smoke spreading in Southern California?
Yeah, so we have poor air quality throughout Southern California, but near the Bobcat fire is where we're getting those local impacts. So overnight, we're seeing the impacts go southwest from the mountains down into the downtown area. And as the day goes on, there's a little bit of relief as the winds shift and take some of that smoke north and east. But it's really those local areas in the San Gabriel Valley into downtown that are seeing the impacts of the Bobcat fire.
Seems like the wind is kind of a double-edged sword. If you have more active winds, that can spread fire, but it also can disperse the smoke somewhat, can't it? So with the kind of calm winds that we've had, that hadn't been good for our air quality. And when do we think that there'll be some sort of an increase in the wind to mix things up?
We're hopeful over the next few days that the winds will start shifting out of the south and into the north. So that'll have the effect of both diminishing this plume that's coming from Northern California, and the fresh smoke hopefully will be moving more north than the southward direction that it has been moving over the last week or so. But that should also help with the local impacts of the Bobcat fire and the local fires as the wind will blow that north up over the mountains rather than down into the valleys.
Philip, thanks so much. Always appreciate your coming on with us and talking about this air quality, and obviously important for people to take this into account and restrict your activity accordingly. And again, there's that great app that you can do. I've been using it on my phone, which will give you, for not just where you are, but different locations, Air Now is the app, and the AQMD provides the local information on that Air Now app, which you can download on your phone. Philip, thanks so much.
Thank you, Larry.
We appreciate it. Philip Fine, South Coast Air Quality Management District. Well, yesterday brought into stark relief yet again the competing visions for what's at play with the deadly, fast-moving wildfires that California and the rest of the West have been experiencing over these past several weeks. President Trump, in his visit yesterday to California, talked about what he saw as the reasons behind it. Here's Governor Newsom making his case to the president that climate change is largely responsible.
When we're having heat domes, the likes of which we've never seen in our history, the hottest August ever in the history of the state, the ferocity of these fires, the drought 5+ years, losing 163 million trees to that drought, something's happened to the plumbing of the world. And we come from a perspective, humbly, where we submit the science is in and observed evidence is self-evident, that climate change is real and that is exacerbating this.
Later in the briefing yesterday, California's Natural Resources Secretary Wade Crowfoot also argued that it's important to recognize the role of climate change in the fires. Here's President Trump's response to that.
It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
As Wade Crowfoot, again, California Natural Resources Secretary with the president. Then at the end of the news briefing, the governor told the president more needs to be done with the state-federal stewardship partnership on forest areas and wildlands. Here's the president's response.
That's something I feel so strongly about. You can knock this down to nothing. You know, you go to Europe and different places in Europe, countries where they're forest countries, and they're very, very strong on management, and they don't have a problem. They really don't have with, as they say, more explosive trees than we have in California.
Joining us to talk about what is at play in these devastating fires that we've had here in California is Greg Giusti, who's Forests and Wildland Ecology Advisor Emeritus with the University of California's Division of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Mr. Giusti, thank you very much for being with us. We're getting kind of stark versions of what's at play here. But share with us, you know, what are the range of factors we're looking at that have made these fires so terrible?
Morning, Larry. That's a voluminous question. Certainly, climates have changed in California. We know that we have less fog days. We know that our rainy season has become very constricted. We know that vegetation this time of year has gone months without a drink. And as we move more into the autumn, leaves are starting to senesce just as part of their natural life cycle. So the vegetation is getting drier. We're dealing with the legacies of past land use practices and management, where we have a lot of old growth forests have been converted to much younger stands, where at one time when the landscape was covered with larger trees, they were more fire resistant. Their canopies were more dense. There was more shade, less ground cover. Today, the opposite is true, where perhaps prior to 20th century logging, tree densities were 40, 50, 60 trees for the acre, big trees. Now there are hundreds, if not 1,000, trees or stems per acre in some of these areas. So it's a combination of change in climate and a combination of more combustible fuels across the landscape, drying out longer and being more flammable.
As we continue, we'll talk about some of the timber practices that Greg Giusti is talking about and talk about forest management, the role of a warming California in drying out our wilderness areas, making them more susceptible to these kinds of high-intensity, fast-moving and deadly fires that we've experienced. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Just want to offer a reminder as well that we are dealing with the Bobcat fire. It's been moving in the direction of our transmitter on Mount Wilson. There is a possibility that it could affect our broadcast. So if that happens, you can still find us streaming at kpcc.org, on the KPCC app, and of course, on your smart speaker, you can just tell it to play KPCC. Back in 1 minute. University of California Wildland Ecology Advisor Emeritus Greg Giusti with us on Air Talk. Greg, let's talk about some of the forestry practices that have played into these more recent terrible fires. I mean, you go back 150 years, and even the Gold Rush area, there was a lot of clear cutting of trees, right, for the whole process of mining, and then that continued into the 20th century. With those sorts of clear cutting of mountainous areas, Did we, as soon as that started regrowing, start having fires like this? Or what has led in the more recent years them to seemingly be so much more intense than they were, say, in the middle of the 20th century?
Well, Larry, you touched on it in terms of the conversion of older forests to younger forests. You know, back in the gold rush days, people cut one tree at a time with handsaws and axes, so the level of aggression was minor. What really wasn't until after World War II, when mechanization and diesel became widely available, that we saw more industrial scale timber harvesting on timberlands. And so, when we look at the starting in the late 40s and in the 50s and 60s and through the 70s, it was pretty aggressive practices. And yeah, you're right. Even age management or clear cutting was more or less the standard practice. It wasn't until 1971 in California, when the California Forest Practices Act was passed, that replanting was even required. So a lot of these lands that were harvested, cleared, if you will, were allowed to come back naturally. And in most cases, the dominant vegetation that came back were sprouting species and brushy species. And so, and consequently, fewer conifers. So the reason there wasn't that much burning going on back in the 50s and 60s is there was a mindset, the smoky bear mindset, that fire was bad. And so California and most of the western states for the last 100 years have had a very aggressive fire exclusion policy and didn't allow fire to play its natural role. Consequently, with the absence of fire, with the emergence of more vegetation across the landscape, more flammable vegetation across the landscape, now we're paying the price for those past decisions. When a fire does ignite, it has a lot of fuel to feed off of, and they can turn into these conflagrations that we're seeing.
So what is our best way going forward, given that we've got all this brush that has built up? We've got trees in many places that are not as resilient to fire as those old growth trees that we had in California more universally. What do we do now?
Well, recognize that California is a forested state. So when we talk about timber harvest, we're talking about timberlands. And those are legally defined as lands that have commercial trees. A lot of the fires we're seeing today are in hardwood forests, oak woodlands. They have other economic values, mostly ranch lands or being converted for vineyards or even being converted for people to live out them. So we have to recognize that we have different kinds of forests in the state that have had different land use practices and different policies. Also, we have to recognize that half of California is publicly owned. The largest landowners are the federal government, U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management, Department of Defense, and national parks. California as a state owns relatively few acres of forest land, a few parks, a few demonstration forests up here in the north. But by and large, California is publicly owned by the federal government. And so there has to be a shift and recognize that Congress is the stewards of these lands, and they are responsible for providing the resources, the appropriations, to give the responsible agencies the tools and the resources they need to properly manage their lands.
So what does that mean, clearing out of
well,
the...
That means doing a lot of things. That means doing thinnings. That means doing prescribed burning. That means maintaining roads so you have good access for firefighting. That means building defensible space around forested communities. You know, when I grew up, it was, as I said, it was during the Smokey the Bear era, and we talked about forest fires. Well, today we talk about wildland fires, but we have to recognize that a lot of our communities are built in forests, and we have to recognize that forests in California, in some cases, have to burn to complete their life cycles. And so, you know, we need to recognize that fires are a part of the forested landscape. And how do we appropriate resources, time, and energy to make our communities fire resilient and to make the forest more fire resilient. And that could be just recently up here in Sonoma County, driving along Highway 101, there was a couple of goat herds, hundreds of goats along the highway that were being controlled with the use of portable electric fencing to eat the brush along the highway. So we have to recognize that the toolbox has a lot of choices in it, and depending on the appropriation of scale and the feasibility of use, there are lots of different things that could be done. The important thing is something has to be done. We need to start managing vegetation, recognizing that this vegetation is being influenced by atmospheric changes, which are adding to the severity of the fires we're seeing.
We're talking with University of California Advisor Emeritus on Forests and Wildland Ecology, Greg Giusti, joining us on Air Talk. And of course, one of the things, and you touched on this, is the population growth in California. So many of these areas that are on that, you know, interface with wilderness in California were places where people just, you know, had vacation homes or, you know, and now they're full-blown towns and where you've got thousands of people that are right there sitting in very vulnerable areas.
Pretty hard to distinguish the interface anymore, Larry.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
You know, you drive up in the woods, and especially if you drive at night, you see how many lights are on out in the woods and out in the forest. And as you touched on, a lot of these older developments were originally vacation homes, second homes, maybe resorts that were converted to single-family dwellings. And so even the roads that access some of these communities were not built for the size of firefighting equipment that we use today. So, you know, there's planning issues that are involved, and there's infrastructure issues as well.
Greg, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Much more to come next hour on Air Talk.